This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled to have regular guest Rick Kess. Rick is a partner at RSM. RSM is the leading firm for sell-side due diligence, cloud earnings work, and so forth. Rick does a ton of work at RSM with private equity funds. We're going to talk to Rick today about what he's seeing for 2021, how he sort of sees trends in private equity, and a little bit more. Rick, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Pleasure to be here. I'm Rick Kess, and I am a partner at RSM. I focus on the healthcare sector and really focus a lot of effort around our private equity relationships as well. So glad to be part of this discussion and looking forward to it. Thanks, Scott.
So, Rick, let me tee you up right away. We're in early January. They had sort of capital riots yesterday. The markets continue to rise regardless of capital riots. There seems to be a transition of power coming to President Biden. The Democrats will barely hold majority in the Senate, 50-50 with Kamala Harris as a tiebreaker. We'll also have a House of Representatives that is, you know, a smaller majority than it was. What does this mean for private equity? Does it mean anything, or does it mean it's just business as usual and off to the races?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the real question is, you know, the centrists. You know, I think there's, you know, kind of this perception that, you know, with, you know, sort of this little blue wave that kind of came across, you know, all forms of legislature and, you know, the president, obviously, that, you know, that there perhaps could be this kind of increased level of work that the Democrats are able to accomplish. But, you know, that only presumes that every single Democrat votes yes every single time for some of those types of initiatives. And obviously, we know that there's kind of more moderate Republicans and more moderate Democrats that could kind of be really, really important in any sort of legislation. So I think to me, the real question and will come down to, you know, how does Biden and, you know, the rest of his administration really align to the moderates and get them on board, because they're going to really be the swing votes in any sort of massive legislation, whether it be tax legislation or, you know, any other sort of reforms that might happen.
But let me ask you this question. It's somewhat of a straw person question, but because the parties have become so strong and can threaten to primary candidates that are too centrist, isn't it easier for even with a slim majority for the Democrats to hold that majority together to take action, because the people in the center are concerned? I mean, they have to figure out if they're more concerned by being primaried on the left or losing their seat on the right. I mean, what's your sense of how that sort of plays out?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, Scott. I mean, my hope, I guess, is that, you know, somewhere down the road, we find a way to become more willing to work on both sides and less divided and, you know, get more cohesive, if you will. And maybe, you know, through some of the actions that, you know, in the recent past, and hopefully, you know, with the vaccine and maybe some more positive things coming through from that perspective, that maybe, you know, we can get back to a sense of, you know, less importance on, you know, kind of those fringe, you know, votes, if you will, to more willingness to accept a moderate perspective. Because, you know, as you know, and we all know, you know, it not much can happen from a legislation perspective without, you know, some sort of agreement on both sides. And to get there, I think you do need a little bit of compromise and willingness to work with each party. So, you know, and my hope, I hope that we get a little bit of more back to the willingness to work with the other side of the party.
Rick, with this relatively split Congress, does the private equity community view it as not as likely to go after the carried interest, not as likely to increase the capital gains tax, or is there still a great deal of concern on that? And what does that mean for deals?
Yeah, I mean, from the private equity groups that I've been speaking with recently, you know, that's their focus isn't necessarily on, you know, what legislation may come. You know, I don't think there's concern about that. And I think their concern is somewhat subsided, because I think there's a lot of optimism about the economy. I mean, I think, you know, we all believe, I think in some respect, that, you know, with, you know, hopefully, you know, further vaccine rollout, maybe some more stimulus that, you know, the consumer will, you know, actively engage in the economy at a level that, you know, we were expecting, you know, in the past. And we'll see, you know, an incredible, hopefully an incredible growth in consumer spending in the near future. So, you know, again, I think the optimism around the economy is kind of overriding some of the concerns they may have around some of the other impacts, just because I think they're just seeing an opportunity for growth in the near future.
And a non-serious question, one of the people rioting on Capitol Hill on Wednesday was dressed in a Chewbacca bikini of some sort. I don't know if you've seen, it's been all over the news.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume it's unlikely that that was the managing director of a private equity fund.
I hate to make assumptions, but I think that's a fair one to make for sure.
Well, thank you very much. Rick, anything else we should look forward to in the private equity world in 2021? What's sort of on your radar? What are you excited about? What do you see?
Yeah, no, Scott, I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the year, you know, we saw some legislation come through. You know, obviously I mentioned in my introduction that I follow healthcare probably the closest from a sector perspective. And, you know, one of the legislations that we noted, obviously, was the surprise billing legislation. And to me, you know, obviously, you know, there's perspectives on both sides of that equation, but it nevertheless likely will change some of the investment thesis around investment in certain, you know, physician practices and whatever you might think of. So, you know, just a curiosity from my perspective there is what the private equity investment thesis will be and how they'll, you know, kind of change the way they approach some of those types of organizations that perhaps were more likely to engage in those types of activities. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that perspective. And then the other thing that I've been really curious about is, you know, from a Biden perspective on healthcare, you know, really, what do they do from a value-based care perspective? Do they continue pushing that as a model? I think private equity is very, very bullish on how they can bend the cost curve for healthcare. So I think that, you know, value-based care is generally accretive to at least my clients that I talked to in the private equity space. And then, you know, lastly, you know, if Biden is somehow able to either to a carrot or a stick, get more states to expand Medicaid, you know, what that could do from kind of an attractiveness perspective on, you know, whether it be behavioral health or primary care, or some of the other types of investments that private equities might make in the healthcare sector.
I think three fascinating points, Rick. The point on value-based care and your clients doing well with it, private equity owners doing well with it, it's more and more akin to subscription-based models, and the whole world of business is trying to move towards some kind of subscription-based models. And that's what value-based care feels like to many of the private equity investors in terms of healthcare. The second point you made was the movement towards expanding Medicaid. Currently 70 million plus people are on Medicaid. It's the largest segment of population after commercial insured, and whether President Biden is able to move people towards that through Medicaid expansion or move people towards more Medicare through reducing the Medicare eligibility age to 60, those things would be enormously popular with the public and also be popular, I think, with private equity funds and investors, although it might take a little bit of investment away from or reimbursement away from commercial payers, which is always sort of a negative from a private equity perspective. Your last point on surprise billing versus out-of-network billing, from a physician practice perspective, it really comes down to leverage versus payers. Do they have an option to go out-of-network or not? Or does that become so diluted because the payer has some control of the pricing on the back end? You know, to one person, it's surprise billing. To another person, it's their ability to fight with payers over their what they're getting paid. And it's a fascinating sort of discussion and situation as to how that will evolve as well. Rick, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Always far more thoughtful than I am. I apologize for the Chewbacca private equity question. I know it's inappropriate. but I appreciate you joining us greatly. And at the level of your seriousness, that you were able to deflect the question and I can't help myself but ask. But thank you so much for joining us today, as always, on the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity.